Hello, everybody. This is Blake Ruby from San Antonio. Welcome to my show, Gods and Goddesses. The sun is going down over the distance. It's amazing how every week, because my show starts at 6 p.m. every Saturday, I see that the sun is more and more in the sky before going down. Do you know what I mean? It's more up and shining, you know, rather than compare it to a month ago today, it would have been down below the horizon by now. It's amazing. God is good all the time. I'm trying to open up this. I've got a Word document here. I don't know what's happening to it. I'm trying to scroll down, and maybe that's why. Hold on just a minute, please. It's acting very strange. Wow. Maybe, I've never seen it do that before. I'm trying to scroll down. It's not doing it. Anyway, how have you been? I've been all right over the last week. The usual stuff kind of going on. Telework continues. And, I hear coyotes behind our backyard. They're sounding off. They usually do as the sun goes down. And, wow. I don't know if you can hear them over in the distance. They're kind of close, actually, maybe 100 yards away or so. They've come to listen to my show, I think. It's all right. So what I'm going to do here, because I can't get this Word document to work, that is so wild. It must be some ETs out there causing this to happen. They don't want me to talk about it. I wrote down these topics that I have for my show, and one of them was, I can go by what I remember. One of them was what it's like to be a kidney transplant donor. And I've talked about this on my show before. My son might be listening in. Bryce, a shout out to my son over there in Burbank, California. I'm here in San Antonio, Texas. My son is an outstanding young man who has been through two kidney transplants. The first one was back in 1995 when I donated one of my kidneys to him at Stanford University in San Francisco at the Children's Hospital there. He was 10 months old at the time, and I think he holds the record for being the youngest, unless, my research has failed me. And he's looked too, and he was 10 months old at the time of the transplant. That was when I gave him one of my kidneys, and it was an amazing operation. And I was in the Army at the time, on active duty. One of our dogs wanted to come out. She heard the coyotes, I think. She likes to go out there and bark back at him, you know, when they do their yipping and yapping and howling, etc. So anyway, my son got a second kidney from his best friend's mom up in Ohio back in 2014 at the University of Michigan, the 2nd of July, so remember the day. And he can tell you what it's like to be a kidney transplant recipient. As a donor, it's been going on 26 years, the 29th of March, 1995. And so what's it like, if you're wondering out there, you know, what's it like, you're thinking of doing it perhaps, to help someone out. It is different, shall I say that. I shall say that. It is different. Life is different. I used to have a desire to do more. I would think that's a proper way of putting it. I used to be able to be more physically active, I think. And after the surgery, my right side, because they took the kidney out on the right-hand side. Now they have less invasive surgery, so they don't have quite an incision. I've got an incision from about 7 inches long, you know, on my side. And over the years, it has been kind of painful. Right after the operation, it was like a sheet there. It was stiff. It was like a board. And it took a while to get my feelings back. The nerve endings were cut. You know, when they performed the kidney transplant, they, you know, cut you from side to side. And so it took years to get the feelings back in that lower right abdominal area. And I remember I was up in about a day, and they have you walking around. You know, they get you walking right away. So that's the best way to recover, is to just get up and start walking. And they took me down to see my son. And he was hooked up to machines. And he was only 10 months old at the time, but he was hanging in there like a trooper, like a real soldier. I could see the pain, you know, on him. You know, he was medicated, but he was fighting, you know, for his life, so to speak. And he was alive and, you know, just fighting the pain. That's the best way I can describe it. And he's always been a fighter. And he's done very well for himself. They're living in Burbank now. He was working for Warner Brothers. He's an actor. He's gotten some roles in Superstore. It was one of the roles. Days of Our Lives was another role. He was in a music commercial one time, a pretty well-known singer. I forget the name of the person, a Korean fellow, I think. Not the one that we all might be familiar with, but some other Korean singer. Not the ones to the several guys that sing, and they're very excellent singers and all, but this was a different individual. So, as a kidney transplant donor, my life had to make some changes, which was okay. I just felt the need to get on a better diet for my life, you know, to ensure my longevity. I just naturally gravitated in that direction. And I told you before on previous shows that I'm a vegan/vegetarian. That was one of the things I felt I needed to do, because I was, in 1995, I was 41 years old. I was born in 54. And so, I was already pretty old, you know, and I made that adjustment to my life. I tried to eat less sugar, sweets, fat. So I started drinking mainly water. Never really was much of a sweet eater, you know. When I was younger, as a boy, I would eat bubble gum and fudgesicles and maybe pie and cake sometimes. Not a lot, I think, if my memory serves me correct. One of the happiest times of my life was growing up in Nashwauksis, Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada. I'm a Canadian citizen and an American citizen, both. I was born and raised in Canada. I lived in New Brunswick, two different places. I lived in Ontario. I was born in Barrie. Right after I was born, about a year after my dad, he had joined the Canadian Army. My parents had immigrated from England after World War II. Dad had been in the British Army and was at Normandy and Dunkirk, one of the youngest captains in the British Army. So I was told. He got wounded right towards the war's end. Had to be laid up in a hospital as the war came to an end, which was a hard thing for him. He didn't have to go through. He had to leave his men behind. But he got part of his left hand blown off by a German recoilless rifle. I mentioned that in a previous show, I do believe. And my mother went through the bombing of London, so they were war babies and very bitter. You know, when someone's trying to kill you, will change your life, you know, your perspective. And so they immigrated to Canada in approximately 1947-48. I can't remember exactly. And they worked at a farm. A relative of theirs had a farm on the Mackenzie River in British Columbia. So they worked there and they tanned for gold and had a pretty meager existence, you know, not making much money, but they were happy. And then they moved to Ontario. Dad was in the, started with the Canadian Army. They did a kind of like a lateral transfer. And he kept his rank, I think. He began back as a captain and started working his way through the ranks over the years. But there in Barrie, I was born, and then we went to Halifax, Nova Scotia, and then over to, for 2 years, and then over to Oromocto, New Brunswick, and then to Germany for 2 years back in 59 to 61. In two different places in Germany, Hamer and Zoist, 1 year each. And then we moved back to New Brunswick, but this time Fredericton, a suburb by the name of Nashwauk, sits alongside the beautiful blue St. John River. And I went to the second, it was 1962 to 68. And every year of the 60s was the last year of the year of the 60s was the grade I was in. That's an easy way for me to remember it. So in 62, I was in the second grade. In 68, I was in the eighth grade. And it was one of the happiest times of my life. Behind our backyard on a street called Douglas Avenue, we had a huge field. And it was beautiful all times of the year. In the summertime, we used to go play in those fields. We would play baseball. We would go and look for snakes, these little red-belly snakes. They would be underneath rocks, and we would go and be turning rocks over just to see them, catch them, let them go. And we would climb trees. Those fields had strawberries in June. They had raspberries and blackberries over in another area. I can still remember in my mind's eye where they were. In August, they had blueberries. There was a blueberry patch right behind our backyard. There was apple trees. There was one tree I used to climb. In retrospect, I was a lot braver than I realized now. I mean, back then, let me rephrase that. I was a pretty brave young boy. As I used to climb this tree, it was about maybe 60, 70 feet off the ground. We called it the King Tree. And then we get up at the top and look out over, they had the top cut off. Someone had gotten up there and shaved off the top. And it offered quite a view in all directions, you know, and that was kind of fun to get up there. But it was dangerous, you know. And anyway, those are kinds of things I used to do. And then in the winter time, there was a toboggan hill we used to go to over in the distance. And so it was a very perfect environment for a young boy growing up. And school wasn't that far. The elementary school I went to was like maybe a mile away behind our backyard. I could cut directly through the, go over the fields into the forest and come out and there would be the elementary school. So I went through grades 2 through 4. And then there was another school called the Nashwauk Memorial School. And that was a little bit farther. It was about close to 2 miles, I think. I used to walk to and from school each day. Sometimes I'd get a ride from my parents, especially if the weather was really cold. And it was cold there in the wintertime. Oh, my God, it snowed. And, you know, New Brunswick is above the state of Maine. So any area in Canada is north of the United States, and therefore, you know, it's, generally speaking, is colder than anywhere in the United States. Anywhere in the United States. So I wonder why I can't get my... Looking at this, it's very strange why it's doing this. I'm not sure why. Maybe if I close this document and reopen it. Because I I'll write my thoughts down. When I shift from subject to subject, I hope you don't mind. I had quite a day today. I got up and I went to the track, the dirt track on Lackland Air Force Base. And my plan was to walk around the track, do a fast walk, and then incorporate a sprint in between, like maybe a 100-yard sprint. But I started walking on the track, and I've tried the fast walk before. Have you ever done a power walk? It's supposed to be good for you, but for me, I try it sometimes, and I just can't get into it, you know? So I went off the dirt track, and I went over to the rubber track, and I did some 100-yard sprints. And then it was coming up to 11 o'clock, and I was going down this road on the way to the grocery store, and it was, like I said, about going on 11 o'clock, and there was a Zumba class at Gold's Gym at 11. I talked with my wife earlier about going, so I pulled up to a stoplight, and I gave her a call, and she was doing this speech contest with Toastmasters. She was one of the judges. And she said, well, the speech contest is going on till 11 o'clock, and I'll meet you there. So I went inside the class and jumped, danced, spun around, danced to the music, in other words, for an hour. Jackie came at about 11:30, but she didn't know I had registered for the class. And so she did a treadmill and then the rowing machine, and then we went and had lunch. And anyway, so I was talking about Bryce, back to Bryce, my son. You know, he's one of the youngest kidney transplant recipients. And his mother, my ex-wife, lives in Ohio, and she did a great job looking after him. She was the perfect mother, you know, ensuring that he took his medicine always, because when you're a kidney transplant recipient, you have to take immunosuppressant drugs. So the kidney's not rejected, you know. And Bryce still takes him to this day. So God has been good looking out for him. He's doing well, thanks to God. And back to me being a donor, I would do it again in a heartbeat, because he was my son. And I think there are some differences, there are some minor disabilities associated with, to be truthful, with a kidney donation, because they say that you can live all right with one kidney, and that is true for the most part from everything I've seen, heard, read about. But there are some subtle differences. You know, as I was mentioning, I don't have that desire anymore to go out and run 5 miles or 10 miles like I used to, or run 2 miles in under 12 minutes, or do push-ups or sit-ups, or very strenuous exercise, although I've been doing a lot of running, trying to, you know, get some quality of life for myself so I can, you know, feel good, because it's, you know, I'm 66 years old, and I do have these associated disabilities. I'm getting disability from the VA for my back, and because I found out when I was in the Army that I had fractured my spine and misaligned my fourth and fifth lumbar vertebrae. I don't mean to turn this into a, you know, a pity kind of thing. I'm just telling you the facts. It's okay to talk about everything, right? But I'm doing pretty well under the circumstances. You know, I'm just saying that the disabilities associated with kidney donation. And as I mentioned, I would do this again, and I would encourage somebody to give that gift of life, because that's what it is, a gift of life to somebody. If you give them one of your kidneys, the disabilities that I have are the scar, you know, on my right side. It can be painful and swollen in that area right now. It looks like I've got a love handle on my right side compared to my left side. That's after 25 years, so maybe that's to be expected. I don't know. And then my digestion too, because when, now it's different, you know, they have less invasive surgery, but they cut the, when they did the incision to take out the kidney, it cut the nerves, and so my lower right abdominal area, which is the swollen part, I think. If you think of the skin on the outside of the abdominal area, if that's tightened and that bothers you for years, and naturally it's going to affect the digestive processes underneath, you know, that makes sense, doesn't it? That's logical. And what else? And the, well, there's no long-term research as far as what life is like living with only one kidney. A lot of people have lived to be a ripe old age, you know. As I was mentioning, people can live with one kidney. That's a fact. But is it safe to assume then that there might be some, because I'm sure that God didn't intend for us to, He gave us two kidneys, the Creator did. Gave us two kidneys to live with. But if you give one up, I mean, you still, the one compensates when you lose one. The one compensates for the other. So it kind of, rises to the occasion, so to speak, and is able to function, like for the two. Which is kind of a gift of, amazing thing, you know, that it's like that. But it's not natural, if you will. God didn't make a mistake when He gave us two kidneys instead of one. Although the appendix, they say, is a mistake. It serves no function at all whatsoever. The appendix in our bodies does not have a role. It does not serve a purpose. Anyway, let me think, what else besides the kidney donation? The digestive system, the scar fatigue, that's another one too. I told you that there was a desire, less of a desire to do strenuous exercise. That's one of the things also. So you could say fatigue. And then you might have some anxiety or depression associated with having lost a kidney, maybe some PTSD. This is not on the scale similar to, say, someone who has come back from a combat zone, but still, nevertheless, it is an anxiety about one's longevity or, you know, eating the proper foods. I noticed that in 1997 that I couldn't really sleep on my side, so that's another thing, too. I hope I'm not discouraging you from donating your kidney to someone else, because I mean, it's 25 years, going on 26 years now, and I've got a pretty good quality of life. I can still go out, you know, I can do some running. I can, like, sleep okay, you know, if I stay on my back. And I'm feeling pretty good, you know, I'm surviving. I've got sleep apnea, and that's another thing, too. I think you could associate that with the, well, there's three things you can associate it with. I told you about the digestive condition I have as a result of the incision on my right side, and also I think because the kidneys aid in the digestive processes, there is a subtle change that might cause a disease, like the gastrointestinal reflux disease, the GERD. It could. Now, I don't know for sure, but it might be associated with that. It's a possibility. I've got it. A lot of people have it, though. People that haven't donated one of their kidneys. Hold on. One of our dogs, the coyotes are sounding off in behind the backyard, and one of our dogs wants to go out there and start barking at him, but don't want her to do that because that would ruin my show. So she just have to suck it up for a little while. Anyway, so, and you can do the research on the internet, find out about donating a kidney if you're out there listening to my show. Listen to me. I've been there. And my son, I think he's listening too. He is awesome. He really is. And he works out. He walks and runs. And he used to work out with weights for a while. He's doing, he's 26, and he's doing pretty good. Hey, God bless him and help him. And so he's on, he got his second kidney back in 2014. And he's hoping that he won't need another one. It's possible. He's doing all the right things, you know, pulling out all the stops to ensure his longevity. And we're hoping that there'll be somebody that would donate one of their kidneys to him in the future. And I'm telling you truthfully everything that's going on with my life. But even still, as I said, I'll do it over again in a heartbeat. And hopefully that, you know, you could be like me. And if you did donate one of your kidneys, you can hang tough for 20, 30, 40 years. You can live to be a ripe old age. And then you can give that gift of life to somebody, you know. And you can do all that research on the internet for yourself. You can read the testimonials from people who have donated kidneys. And because I tell you, there's nothing like a real kidney. My son was on peritoneal dialysis twice. And that's a wake-up call, ladies and gentlemen out there, you know, to take good care of your kidneys. Because it's no joke when you're on dialysis, you know, and your kidneys have failed you because you haven't been eating properly or drinking enough water. It's no joke. Peritoneal dialysis is a rough thing to have to go through. My son could tell you, you know, how tough it is. And they have hemodialysis too, you know. But he was on peritoneal dialysis from age 3 to 10 months, just before the transplant. And my ex-wife and I, we went through it. Our alarm was going off in the middle of the night, you know, he was hooked up to the machine, and he would roll over in his bed, and that would kink one of the tubes, and the machine alarm would go off, and then he also had a tube up his nose to try to get him to take this high-calorie formula, because he was throwing up a lot, and he had to be a certain weight to be ready for the transplant, you know. So he was throwing up a lot, and so they're pumping this high-calorie formula through his nose, and then he'd pull a nose tube out, you know, because it was irritating him. And another alarm would go off, so we were up at all times in the night, taking turns, you know, going in and checking on him, turning the alarm off, and making sure he was okay, putting the tube back in his nose, and that was a bear sitting right there, you know, because he didn't like that. And so at age 10 months, I donated one of my kidneys, and just like that, a miracle, you know, the kidney starts working in his body, and he started making his own urine, you know, his own pee-pee, and there's no substitute for a real kidney, you know. People, think about all the people that go through dialysis, you know, people who have diabetes. Ladies and gentlemen, please take good care of yourself, because you want to ensure your kidneys last, you know. Do the research. Read for yourself. You're all very intelligent people. We all are, you know, worthy of respect and dignity. Don't let your guard down when it comes to that. There's not only myself and my son as an example, but thousands of other people out there that have been through it or are going through it right now as we speak, you know. So, a shout out to my son. I think he might be listening. I love him very much. We always say that, you know, when we talk to each other on the phone. You know, I'm blessed because I feel like he came from heaven, from that pre-existence we all came from that land of light. Anybody know where that land of light is? Is there a land of light anywhere that you can see in the sky? That's what I believe. And he is a very special soul that came here to help me, because I really, my friends, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for my son. Where I am at this point in my life, at this location, doing what I'm doing, if it hadn't been for my son, who came down from heaven on a very difficult mission, sacrificed himself, had to go through all that pain and suffering, and he's been through a lot. And his future is not certain, if you know what I mean. And yet he handles it like a trooper. You know, he's a brave, brave soul. And so I love my son very much. And we always, at the end of our telephone conversation, we joke around with some stuff. We're joking all the time. But one thing we say to each other is, just like in Tiny Tim, you know, A Christmas Carol, he says, "May God bless us, everyone." So my son says it in such a way it just cracks me up. "May God bless us, everyone." You know, that, ladies and gentlemen, is the perfect prayer when you start praying for everybody in the world, because we're all brothers and sisters in spirit. We really are. All this stuff we're going through right now with the pandemic and politics, people back and forth, you know, they can't get away from it, you know. If it's not one administration, it's the other one. And they're both guilty, you know. They're pointing the finger at each other. They're both guilty of it. They're wrong. You know that they're wrong because the Constitution says we, the people, are more important than the competition that's going on between Democrats and Republicans. They're not doing what is right sometimes. Maybe not all the time. But I've been hearing all that's going on. I'm not going to waste my time talking about their nonsense, you know, nonsense, because that's what it is. Not doing what the founding fathers wanted, looking after the people, we the people, the welfare of the people. How can you govern the people? How can you govern the country when you're fighting a party, you know, the opposite party off your back, at your throat, always criticizing you for one thing or another? That's not an effective way to govern the country. You should be working across the aisle, talking things out, doing what's right. That's more important. But they're not doing what's right. In most cases, from what I see, what I've heard, they should be doing the right thing. Let their conscience be their guides. They're not doing that. Like, let me give one example, and then I'll go to another subject. With Liz Cheney, she had every right to vote for the impeachment of Mr. Trump, because what he did was an impeachable offense. That's undeniable, you know, causing an insurrection. You know, his rhetoric, it has always been divisive and angry, and he incited that angry mob, and they came to the Capitol building and they killed some people. Different people were killed, and they broke in there, and that was wrong, desecrating that sacred place. You know, and I'm not talking about I don't have a Republican or Democrat hat on right now. I'm just saying that what they did was wrong. And he got them worked up, him and Giuliani and a couple of other people. And these extremists, you know, on the right, QAnon or whatever, that's a fancy name, but I guess they don't need a fancy name. What they need is just a plain, basic name, like bad people doing bad things. Don't give them a name like Hezbollah or Al-Qaeda or QAnon or whoever they are in the world. They have these fancy names that people get all excited about. Oh, they use their name like special, but it's not. They're just bad people doing bad things, period. Case closed. And so we need our politicians to work together for the people, which they're not doing. But that's typical, my friends, of a lower evolutionary civilization, which we are. On a scale from 1 to 9, we're number 1. We're otherwise known as a planet of sorrows throughout the universe. All those ETs out there looking at us and wondering if, you know, we'll make it into the intergalactic community, take our place there, or will it never happen, you know, because the creator of the universe, my friends, the supreme creator, and how can you deny that the creator exists when you look at all the life here on earth? You know, over 1 million types of insects, over 30,000 types of fish, 10,000 types of birds, reptiles, 9,000 types of amphibians, 5,000, 6,000 types of mammals, all the flowers, thousands of types of flowers and trees, fruits and vegetables. You can't deny that there is a creator. That didn't happen by accident. And if it did happen by accident, it could happen by accident elsewhere, right? That's logical. But if there is a creator who's powerful and knowledgeable enough to create all this life on earth, logically, that creator could create this type of life or a different life anywhere. So I could sum that up in just a few words. The creator of the universe can do anything. Now, in case you didn't hear that, I'll say it again. And I'm a child of the creator, just like you are, so I'll say it again. The creator can do anything. Did you get that? The creator can do anything. Anything. We need to get on board with that. You know, that mindset. We're stuck in this, what I call Copernican gap. We don't even know that there's life out there. Some people think we're alone, but I just proved to you through logic that we're not alone, but so it goes on and on. Just imagine, if you will, use your imagination for me for just a few seconds. If we were to make contact with an extraterrestrial species, and they're out there, and they're looking at us, there are some that are more involved with monitoring our civilization than others that have what you might call a guardianship of our planet and have been observing us for thousands of years and have intervened in our past before, and they're out there and they're helping us in ways that we're not really aware of, because such is the way things go in the universe. A law, one of the laws of the universe says that we're all interconnected, and so we help each other, but you're not given everything on a silver platter, so to speak. There are some things that you have to work for, you have to earn, and if you make a mistake, you have to pay the penalty for that. But just imagine, if you will, if we did make contact with, you've seen pictures of who they are, that have some movies, you know, usually the movies are negative, you know, not positive. A lot of the movies on television nowadays are negative, not positive. Don't be fooled, my friends out there. Television is a powerful medium, but it's not more important in your life, in my life. These people that go on television and talk to us, and we hear them talking, they're at the top of their game. You know, it's a job for them. They're making money on television, right? Commercials, everything. It's all a money-making business. And at times it can be very disrespectful of who we are. People watching that, you know, people who have lives. And it's disrespectful for us, our lives, because they're doing their thing. And also it's like a time machine too, because usually when you're watching TV, you're watching stuff that's long in the past, you know, or maybe not so long in the recent past. Nothing is really live on television. I hope, didn't mean to break your bubble, but even like a live show like the Super Bowl has about a 5-second delay, you know, so it's never really live. So consider it a time machine, you know. Every time you look at it, you're subjecting yourself to a time machine. That might be one reason for the pandemic, you know, and I'm guilty just like anybody else sometimes of thinking that it's real time when it's not, you know, and that's a mistake I made and I make, but I have the intellect to reason my way through that, you know, to understand that there is kind of like a ghost in the machine, if you will, in our lives that we have to understand in order to move forward. You know, I could live without television. I really could. But unfortunately, right now I've got my wife, I've got my stepdaughter and 3 grandchildren living in my house. I've talked to my son Bryce about this before. And he said, "Dad, I hardly watch any television. There's too much negativity going on." And he's right. And not only negativity, but violence, fantasy violence. And with a pandemic going on in the world, who really wants to watch fantasy violence anymore? You know, we want real stories. Give us people's life stories, you know, the heroes that are out there, people that make sacrifices, that do things for other people, I'm curious to know what other people are doing, what they're thinking. We're all co-creator gods in the making, I believe, you know, on a soul journey, evolving from one planet to another in the universe. This planet here is of the lower evolutionary category, but don't get me wrong, you know, it's a very beautiful, beautiful world. Imagine what it was like here on a planet 500 years ago. Just raw, pristine. When people first came over from the old world, you know, and discovered America, even though there were Native American Indians living here already, but the land was pristine, the air was clear, the water was pure, crystal clear. You could drink from any body of water anywhere and not have to worry about polluted water. It was quiet. The nature was, I mean, it was in your face kind of nature, you know, back then. But now, and we're doing better taking care of the environment. Hold on just a minute. I'm going to turn the light on. I wonder. I've got this document that I wrote down. Okay, now it's working. Anyway, in regard to our planet, and if we did make contact with some extraterrestrials out there living in the intergalactic community, one thing, the first thing they could do, the first thing that they might be able to do, that they would do, I'll say that, is tell us how to cure diseases, whatever the disease. They know all about that. They're very, extremely intelligent, have been traveling the universe for millions of years, have been in existence millions of years longer than us. And they know the way. They could show us the way. They've seen the light, and they can show us the path that we need to travel. But first, we need to prove to them that we're not a very violent, fierce, warlike species, you know? Now, in my opinion, the majority of us are decent, loving, kind, family-oriented people who don't want to hurt anybody. We just want to be left alone. But then you have the bullies, the dictators, Mr. Trump, are you listening? The tyrants. That's not fair. I love him, you know, and I pray for him all. I still pray for him, but those people are a minority, you know, especially the ones that have a lot of money, billionaires, you know, they think that they're in control. Just FYI, in case you didn't realize that, because living in a money-oriented, a monetary system civilization, you'll see that there's a lot of people that have, it's pretty much divided into those who have and those who have not. You know, there's a lot of people who are starving in the world who don't even have enough money to have a bank account, you know, who don't have a roof over their heads. There's a lot of homeless people. And that's because of our monetary system. But as I was saying, most people are good, decent people. It's just a small minority that are the troublemakers, if you will. And we need to grow up, so to speak, in our intellect to let these ETs out there know that we're not going to be shocked and frozen into paralysis at the sight of them, you know, because that's what happens usually. You've heard about people that get abducted. They see these beings, and when you come face to face with another sentient being from another planet who has the capability of traversing the universe in a mechanism, a machine, a flying saucer, or some kind of spacecraft, knowing how to warp time, space, and go interdimensional, who know all about their spiritual self, who they are, as children of the Creator, just like us, unless you are sufficiently prepared for that, unless you are sufficiently developed yourself spiritually, then it's going to shock you into paralysis when you look into their eyes. And they have a way of kind of breaking through that and talking to you in a realistic sort of way, reaching out and saying things that will shock you back into reality, you know, because, put it in other words, you know, we're living in a kind of a fantasy world, and we're not even aware of all that's real around us, to include up there in the sky, all those suns out there that have planets around them, which they're discovering more and more each day. You know, you could say, oh, twinkle, twinkle, little star up in the sky, how I wonder what you are, you know, but I'll tell you what they are. They're suns and solar systems. And as I mentioned, the creator of the universe who initiated the Big Bang can do anything, right? It's a magic that is hard to comprehend. It's the best way I can put it. But it's like taking something out of nothing, creating something out of nothing. That's what the Supreme Creator has done. And that is a magic. I mean, the word magic in and of itself defines the Creator. We couldn't understand what magic is if the Creator didn't create it, you know, if it didn't exist. Magic is the Creator. It's like some of the shows we've seen, a magic wand, you wave a magic wand and something will appear. That's the best way I can describe it, you know? Creator is doing that all the time. The edges of infinite space are expanding as we speak, as I speak. And so it would be nice in my lifetime. I just got to find a way. We have to find a way to make contact with the ETs besides curing the coronavirus, which we're doing pretty good. You know, the vaccinations are getting out to everybody and we're taking pretty good care of ourselves. We're very diligent in doing what we need to do for the most part. But also, what else? Let me change the subject. I'm getting short on time here. I've just got 10 more minutes. I wrote something down and I just wanted to talk about it now. You've heard of transgender people, right? Well, transgender people are essentially people that are born and classified as a certain sex. And then later on in life, they feel like their identity is really the other sex. And so they have a sex change operation. But there is a race of extraterrestrials out there that are known as hermaphrodite. And hermaphrodites are a little different. Similar to transgender, but different in as much as they can reproduce in between with themselves. So there are like 65,000 species of hermaphrodites here on Earth, to include snails. So a snail, you take two snails and they can both reproduce at the same time, you know, doing their thing at the same time. It's amazing. So of the 7.7 million separate species of life here on Earth, 5% are hermaphrodite. That's a tongue twister. But I believe transgender people, as well as people who are what you might call gay or homosexual, are actually people. That's quite a change in subject, right, from one to the other. I'm just running out of time here. I just want to change the subject, because I think they're here to make the world a better place. I've got to think of everything I know how to do to help us make contact with these ETs that are out there. I'm doing my part, my little 2 cents worth, you know, doing what I know how best to help us evolve, to rise up so we can make that contact with them. There's just some things that we need to change, some things we need to understand better in order to make that next step up in our evolution. And the subjects I talk about are all kind of geared in that direction, if you know what I mean. And as I mentioned, I had all these things written down that I wanted to talk about, but, you know, I go changing subjects often. That's what I do. That's what I love to do, you know, my radio show. And I know there's a lot of other people that have radio shows on BBS Radio. And you can have your own show too, if you wanted to, if you're really passionate about something. But back to, and I've talked about this before, gay, homosexual people who have an opposite sex, spirit of an opposite sex in their bodies. So like a person born male here on our planet would have a female spirit, or vice versa, a female with a male spirit in their body. For the most part, that's what they are. And transgenders also are born that way, because that is part of the Creator's plan to bring us all together, to help us love each other. So those people are not to be made fun of, ridiculed, because they're very special. And I always respect that. You know, each of us is worthy of dignity and respect. And we need to start treating each other better, loving each other more, in order to make that rise up so that we can make that contact with ETs out there. Now, I know that was a sharp change in the direction I was going, but can you dig it? You know what I'm talking about? It's a mindset that I'm trying to. I've got 1 minute left, so my friends, one way to do it, and I've told you this before in previous shows, is to pray for each other. Prayer is the key to any solution. There's a prayer for every need in life, but the ultimate prayer is praying for each other. So I encourage you, so we can make that step up in our evolution, to make contact with ETs, and the world will be a super better place. And that is to pray for everybody. So here's my closing prayer. I'll talk to you next week. I love you. Take good care of yourselves, and may God bless us, everyone. Everyone. Bye-bye.